Once upon a time, in a city you never heard of, there was a mayor. He was neither a Democrat nor a Republican. He was mayor mostly because his father had been mayor. The worst that was said about him was that he simply did not know what was going on. And oddly, that had saved him from a scandal or two. He was not a man of the people, despite his campaign ads to the contrary. He enjoyed the perks of being mayor and did not think too deeply about the people whom he served. Until one day, there was a sit-in outside the mayor's office. The halls were full when he arrived for work. His aides tried to whisk him away from the chanting protesters, but the mayor found himself fascinated with what was happening. He read the signs each protester was holding. Some protested the poor quality of public education. Others decried the unavailability of affordable health care or housing. He looked at an unkempt man whose sign read, "Gentrification took my home." Walking through the crowd, he stopped to invite that man into his office, offered him water and a snack, and asked him to tell his story. As fairy tales would have it, this man bore a strong resemblance to the mayor, and the two decided to play a trick on the mayor's advisors by trading their clothing and the sign. The mayor loaned the homeless man his razor to make the look complete. Then the mayor went out in the hallway wearing a worn-out army jacket and torn jeans, while the homeless man enjoyed the crisp feel of a $3,000 suit and dry socks. Their prank would have ended rather quickly, but the police arrived to arrest the protesters soon after the mayor entered the hallway. The mayor was taken to jail, a jail he had never visited, and he was shocked to learn that the jail was overcrowded and run by private contractors. He waited to be offered one phone call, but instead sat in a holding cell for several days. He thought about explaining who he was, but none of the correctional officers were looking at him directly, much less talking to him. He decided to just bide his time. He could not show ID after all. His wallet, as far as he knew, was in the pocket of the homeless man whose place he had taken. When he was finally booked, he gave his own name, which did not raise any eyebrows, but he said he had no address and no ID. Visitors occasionally came to the jail. A men's ministry came through with tiny New Testaments, bringing the prisoners together to remind them of their eternal destination. Quietly, activists working for the release of the protesters visited, bringing pro bono lawyers, soap and other necessities, and snacks to supplement the terrible food. These people looked the mayor in the eye, though they did not recognize him. He felt encouraged about the outcome of his adventure, but decided to stay quiet about who he was. Soon the charges against the protesters were dropped. The mayor and the others were released with no money and no bus ticket. Activists scrambled to pick them up at the jail. The mayor decided not to give them the address of City Hall, but instead, he had them drop him off in the city park, close to a big public hospital. He acquired a piece of corrugated cardboard and borrowed a marker to make a new sign. Like the one he had held in City Hall, it read, "Gentrification took my home." He thought he knew what the sign meant now, as the homeless man had explained how the taxes had been raised on his home until he could not afford it anymore, and he had sunken into debt trying to keep up with mortgage payments. After an accident at work, he was no longer able to provide for himself, and he was out on the street. The mayor had seen homeless people panhandling at highway exits before, so he walked the mile to the overpass and held his sign. Occasionally, someone slowed down and offered him a few dollars, but more often, a hand reached out to give him the finger or throw trash in his general direction. Much more often, the driver simply would not look at him. The mayor gathered enough dollars to eat a meal of fast food, and he settled in the park, wondering how he was supposed to spend the night. He saw others who had blankets rolled up on their backs. Someone told him that there was a church that distributes blankets once a month downtown, but that day was a couple of weeks away. He offered to give the mayor one of the two blankets he had since it was not very cold that night. The mayor thanked him profusely until the other man became uncomfortable and took off for another part of the park. Thirsty, the mayor found a water fountain in the park, but he hesitated. He had seen reports from the local Environmental Protection Agency about water safety in the city. There were elevated lead levels in the water because of a sketchy deal diverting water from a new source. He had helped suppress the report for the time being, but he had begun to drink only bottled water. The mayor made his way back and forth from the highway overpass to the city park. He talked with a regular in the park who had good advice about where to get clothes and an occasional hot meal. He learned how to use newspapers to insulate his blanket. He learned to anticipate police sweeps through the park and stay out of the way. It was easy to be arrested just for being homeless, and he didn't want to spend any more time in jail. He watched, he listened, he felt things: cold, rain, wind, loneliness. He planned to return to City Hall before too long. This went on about a week before he came down with a virus. The virus lodged in his chest and wouldn't pass. He was overwhelmed with fever and chills and ached all over. He was not able to take his place by the highway. Nights in the air, which was steadily getting cooler, didn't help. The doc-in-a-box clinic refused to treat him because he had no proof of insurance. Hungry and weak, he finally walked into the emergency room of the public hospital. He expected to be turned away for not having ID or money, but instead was treated humanely, though after great delays, by medical students and residents who told him he had a bad case of the flu. He spent 3 nights in the hospital getting rehydrated and taking antivirals. Volunteers in the hospital spent time with him, chatting with him, and bringing him old magazines to read. One magazine even had his own picture on the cover, and the volunteer never noticed the resemblance. Like everyone else, it was as though she did not really look at him. He was visited by a social worker who sadly explained to him that he would be released to the cold street the next day. He was too well to be eligible for short-term rehab or other placements. The mayor decided it was time to get his identity back. He walked to City Hall, where he was stopped by security. He explained who he was, to their great amusement. Rather than simply escort him off the premises, security called the police. The raving man seemed like a threat, the way he was insisting on being taken to the mayor's office. While he waited for police to come, as fairy tales would have it, the homeless man who had been posing as mayor walked right past him, flanked by aides and talking fast on the way to a meeting. The real mayor called out the imposter's name, Alton, which he was pleased he had thought to ask before trading places with him. "Alton, it's me, Mayor Smith," the mayor yelled. Security tightened around him and started to move him away, but Alton, the homeless man, immediately told them to let him go and told his aides to cancel his meeting. He would be returning to his office with this man and alone. They looked each other in the eye. "What was it like for you?" asked Alton. Mayor Smith said, "It's only been 3 weeks. How long were you on the street?" "3 years, but the first 3 weeks were probably the worst." "I'm ready to return to work," Mayor Smith said, "but I want to hire you. I want someone working for me who knows what it's like on the street. I want to change things. Will you work for me?" Alton gladly gave up the City Hall office to the real mayor and began a job as a liaison for homeless services for the city. The mayor did change things on many fronts. He was concerned in a new way about prison reform, access to government services, the criminalization of homelessness, and access to healthy food and safe water. And as he relentlessly went from agency to agency, he gave speeches that no one could quite understand, in some places claiming, "You will be rewarded, because when I was hungry, you fed me. When I was thirsty, you gave me water. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. When I was sick, you took care of me. And when I was in prison, you visited me. While other speeches he gave were much darker. You are losing your funding because when I was hungry, you did not feed me. When I was thirsty, you had nothing but poisoned water. When I was a stranger, you would not look me in the eye. When I was sick, you did not care for me. When I was in prison, you did not observe basic human rights. No one could understand why the mayor was making things so personal. No one could understand why he had suddenly become so active in social programs. Neither the hospital volunteers, the pro bono lawyers, the people who had handed him money at the highway exit, nor the men's ministry who had visited the prison, the people who had thrown trash at him, or the prison guards who had denied him a phone call could remember anything they had done or not done personally to the mayor. They had never recognized him. When asked by the press, he simply said, "Look inside yourselves. Whenever you did something to or for someone on the street, you did it to me." Ultimately, analogies fall apart. Today's text is not really about a clueless mayor who has a prince and the pauper adventure and has a change of heart. It is about the king of the universe proclaiming his solidarity with the least of humanity, Christ the King, reminding us that he experienced all the poorest among us have experienced. The text reminds us that we never truly see the identity of those who we do or do not choose to serve. If we are wondering whether we are serving someone important or not, we have missed the point. Christ is in solidarity with those who suffer. Christ suffered. Christ suffers with the least of us. And if we reach out to each other, we are serving Christ. Christ the King. We are uncomfortable with even the word king, the idea of the kingdom of God, the thought of being ruled over. We are Americans after all. Our history began with an armed insurrection against a king. Yet we romanticize kings as well. We spend millions of dollars on Disney princess merchandise, follow the romances of the British royal family like a real-life soap opera, and we're fascinated with families with inherited power, like the Kennedys, the Trumps, or even the Kardashians. We want kings to act like kings. We do not expect to find them begging by the side of the road, applying for food stamps, or trying to produce three kinds of ID so they can get a driver's license. We do not carry bottles of water in our cars to hand out to kings in hot weather. We do not expect to be approached by a king in the Kroger parking lot asking for money to buy baby formula. We are safe. We never slighted a king, a prince, a mayor. But we have wronged the king of the universe every time we have dismissed any other person in need. Just like the mayor in his speeches, Jesus makes it personal. Just as you did or did not do it to the least of these, you did it to me. Our king has the power to separate the sheep from the goats, is the only one who judges us. But this same king gave his identity to the neediest and most vulnerable people we ever meet. Today is Christ the King Sunday, a feast day, a celebration of the primacy of Christ over all other allegiances, governments, and all idols. A day to remember who is in charge and to whom we owe our heavenly citizenship. And also the last Sunday of the liturgical calendar. In 1 week, we start Advent, a new church year, when we celebrate the nearing of the incarnation, the overturning of all the rules, the coming of a hungry, thirsty king born where animals are housed, a refugee toddler, an itinerant preacher, a man with no place to lay his head, a homeless king. We are teetering between the glory and the humiliation of Christ. We must therefore see him as two distinct figures. Both the king in our text and the vulnerable least of these, whose identity he claimed. In just a minute, we will sing Sylvia Dunstan's beautiful hymn, "You, Lord, are both Lamb and Shepherd," which juxtaposes the images of Christ. Listen to the first verse. "You, Lord, are both Lamb and Shepherd. You, Lord, are both Prince and Slave. You, Peacemaker and sword bringer of the way you took and gave, you the everlasting instant, you whom we both scorn and crave. We have a king who judges us, yet he is a king who walked among us, who knows what it is like to be hungry, thirsty, a stranger, sick, and lonely. A king whose identity escapes us, who is elusive and difficult to recognize. A king who triumphed over death for us, but who remains hungry, well acquainted with our fear, our need, our deprivation of all things spiritual and physical. A hungry king. Let us look him in the face and all the faces where he is to be seen, and let us start feeding him. Thanks be to God.